You're in tune with What It Is on WNCW. I'm Joe Kendrick. Very glad to be your host as we welcome back WNCW alumnus Armando Belmas for his first appearance on What It Is. We're also joined by Bob Hinkle and Jeff Eason returning to the panel. And today we're jumping into the rich history of studio musicians and studio bands.
Well, I'll start because I was in one. It was a band in New York called the Mount Airy Band. It had nothing to do with Mount Airy, North Carolina. In fact, I'm not sure what the hell it had to do with, come to think of it. But that was the name, and it included Eric Weisberg of, dare I say it, dueling banjos fame, Tom Chapin, Steve Chapin, and myself, and some others as time went by. And it was purely an adventure for a record company who wanted to have a country rock album, if you remember that term. And so we went and made them one, and they put it out, and it started to get a little airplay, and so we started to play live. And as we played live more, we realized why we were a studio band and not a live band. But we had a lot of fun nonetheless. And Eric then moved on to be a member of about three or four other studio bands. I think what's happening now, though, just to skip a little bit, is that the record companies tended to be the people who sort of sprung those projects on the world. And as the record companies have tended to lose their at least their economic ability to do that, and perhaps some other abilities as well, there seem to be less of them. Not necessarily that there are less musicians, but less bands, per se.
Well, I remember back in the old days, it seemed like every big city that had a recording studio had this core group of musicians. There would be one in Detroit and one in Memphis and one in Nashville, New York, Los Angeles, what have you. And if you looked on like a Linda Ronstadt album, you'd see a lot of these same musicians pop up that were popping up on other albums who recorded in Los Angeles, say.
True. That's true. And I think that still probably is true. We were talking earlier before we were recording about the Muscle Shoals scene, and that seems to be revitalizing itself. There's always been a studio musician scene in New York City, just if nothing else because of the millions of jingles they do every day. But there's another thing that is sort of keeping them alive a little bit, and that is there's a group in Asheville called Asheville Horns, and they're studio guys, and they play out as themselves, but they also play out backing up everybody and their brother who needs a horn section. There was a group in New York called the Uptown Horn Band that I actually managed for a short time. And they were everybody's horn section. You know, they were the Giles Band horn section. They were the Stones for a little bit. They were everybody's horn section. And that's what they were. It's really studio guys who were trying to earn a living.
Do you think that it's possible to make that sort of living these days? Or is that a bygone era type of thing? Do these guys have to have their own gigs now? Whereas in before, there were times when you could make it as a studio musician. A lot of them were associated not just with particular studios, but some of them were associated with particular labels as well.
All I can tell you is Eric Weisberg has quite a number of Rolls Royces in his big garage in his house in Brooklyn. Though I don't know if you can still do it to the extent that you could, but I think if you're willing to expand your horizons and not only play behind people and not only play in the studio, but as you say, do your own gigs, you can probably, like everybody else, cobble together a living out of it and sometimes perhaps a good living.
Yeah, and there were also some bands back in the day that seemed like they were not necessarily associated with a studio, but they were studio bands. They didn't necessarily go out and play live. They like to construct all of their material and try to create hits within the studio. You could almost make that case for the Beatles as it being the ultimate studio band because of how infrequently they played live compared to, you know, what they were doing in the studio.
True.
Well, it brings to mind, too, the studio itself as being a fairly successful endeavor nowadays. All of the studios in our immediate region that I know are of note and are doing pretty well are having high-profile gigs recorded there and artists coming to areas around western North Carolina, the Piedmont, and in the mountains and in the upstate. But if the studio musician is kind of an endangered species or might be on the sort of the tail end of the era along with the declining sort of label system, at least you know that the studios seem to be doing fairly well, and it would stand to reason because there are obviously more musicians, more bands, more people recording material nowadays. So from that end of things, it looks like a pretty rosy outlook, at least from this point of view.
And I think it'll get rosier whenever the studios decide that they're multimedia and they're not just audio and it's not just a video studio or an audio studio, and you get a facility that can actually do all of that and create everything that a band needs to take itself forward, including the use of studio musicians. And the other thing, I'm thinking on another track too, and that is there are some really big groups have gotten put together by the record labels. Peter, Paul, and Mary were put together of Warner Brothers Records. Brooks and Dunn were put together of Arista. So, you know, I suppose that's something a label could still do if it decided that it wanted to control everything, and as they always do anyway.
You know, and as we're talking about, you know, studios and actually these buildings that you go into and these dark rooms where there's microphones everywhere, I think a lot about home studios, you know, with technology and it being so easy now to record your own music right on your laptop, you know, like wondering how studio musicians deal with that. I mean, it's almost to the point where you can have a band that's in five, you know, the members are in five different places in the country, and you can put together a track in a day.
Yeah, I think the technology has become threatening to professional studios the same way travel agents and travel bureaus that you used to see on every block in a city are just kind of disappeared because people can do that on their own now. I know the last Daily and Vincent album that I received to review and Rhonda Vincent album, they just went on and on and on about their home studio and how much they love working in their home studio and calling their shots and doing it whenever they want to, as opposed to having to book time in a professional studio. And I think a lot of musicians are kind of going that way as the technology becomes cheaper and better quality for these types of home studios.
Well, you still get what you pay for.
True. Yeah. And then there's also the phenomenon of, okay, I've done the basic track. I got the drums and the bass and the guitar and the vocals. Sure would be nice if I had a horn section. Then you got to go talk to the studio musician.
Or you need to get it mastered.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. So it seems that, you know, there's still going to be those niches of studios that are known for their sort of artistry and being unique for the people that are there. I mean, just look at figures like Steve Albini, you know, a legendary engineer in Chicago. Still records to 2-inch tape as nature intended, I think is his quote.
And the great thing about Albini's studio is that he doesn't charge a lot.
And he is kind of looked down upon in certain circles from other engineers that think that he should charge more because mm-hmm. they charge 2 or 3 times as much themselves.
But he's all about making sure that the bands get recorded and making it affordable for them. And every now and then somebody will come along and pay him $2 million to do something and he'll make royalties. He's fine.
Yeah, I can guarantee you Steve Albini would never have inflicted Mr. Mister on us, which was one of those studio bands that was created just out of studio musicians. Steve Albini, he records who he likes when he likes.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to know, who is guilty for Milli Vanilli, a complete fake in the studio?
I have no idea. Was that a particular producer?
They were studio artists that weren't even really artists at all, you know?
It was a producer that put them together. I think he passed away recently. I'm not sure. Mm. But
yeah,
Yeah. And it was a big deal because it was like, well, Milli
sort of like the beginning of the Grammys Best New Artist curse. Because after Milli Vanilli, everyone who won the Best New Artist just was either like a one-hit wonder or had some kind of horrible personal tragedy.
But I'm remembering what was in the industry at that time, and I'm remembering that the label was the impetus for that producer doing that to those people and to that music.
Your bit of trivia for today on what it is that the Best New Artist Grammy for that year might have been 1990, I believe, was taken away from Milli Vanilli.
That's right.
Never awarded to anybody else. We're talking about studio bands and studio artists today on What It Is. Email us, whatitis@wncw.org. We'll highlight your comments on our Friday edition of the show. I'm Joe Kendrick, joined by Armando Balmas, Bob Hinkle, and Jeff Eason. Until next time.